Hi everybody, I'm Dr. Anu, and today I'm joined by Meg Mill. Meg is a doctor of pharmacy. She's also a functional medicine practitioner with over 2 decades of experience. She's a best-selling author, host of her own podcast, A Little Bit Healthier, and she's also hosting her own summit all about histamine. Welcome, Meg.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being on here. So, Meg, while we've got you, tell us a bit about histamine and hormones, because I believe that there is a link, and not many people know much about, I suppose, either of these subjects, but certainly not together. So we would love to get your input on
Yes,
histamine.
absolutely. So I'm going to start actually by going a little back a step and just talking a little bit about histamine and how it's processed, and then rolling into how it's going to relate to hormones, because so we understand sort of where it's coming from. So we'll kind of do like a brief like histamine 101 for to get into it, and then bring it in, because I do see this so commonly with so many women that I work with that have hormonal imbalances and histamine issues. In really unidentified. It's really fascinating. So I'm so excited to get started. So histamine is something in general, I think, in our bodies that gets a bad rap, sort of like cortisol, because there are a lot of complications when it comes to histamine, like cortisol, that we see all the negative side effects, but it does actually have purpose. So when your immune system detects an allergy or an invader, histamine is primarily released from your mast cells or your basophils to increase your blood vessel permeability so that you can actually reach the cells that are being affected more quickly. So there is, where there's purpose in immune defense and inflammatory response and actually regulating gastric acid and all of those things that we need. But what happens is when we get this overload of histamine, we start having symptoms. And so I like to think of histamine, I like to give an analogy of a bucket with holes in the bottom. So if you're looking at it as a bucket, and your body is the bucket, and you have holes in the bottom of that bucket that are, and sometimes people can, you could use a bathtub too. You're filling the bathtub, or you're filling the bucket and you're draining. So you eat something with histamine, you're exposed to an allergen, you have all of these things. These are all filling your bucket. You keep putting things in, but your body's processing it out too. So we're going to get into the way we process it, but we're processing it out, so it's flowing out of the bucket. Well, the problem happens either in two imbalances. Either we fill our bucket too fast, too much, or our holes get clogged. And when that starts to happen, we start to get this overload of histamine, and that's when we start getting all of these symptoms. And really, because histamine affects, your mast cells are in almost every cell of your body. So you're really getting these overall body effects. You can have, I think a lot of people think that histamine is just allergies, but we can have anything from, anxiety to sleep disturbances to allergies to, I see it a lot when we have hormonal migraines. A lot of times, we have these underlying histamine issues, and we can get into that. Asthma, then we can have, gut infections, irregular periods, PMS, all these different things can actually be coming from histamine because it's an overall body response. So we'll start by saying what clogs the holes. What makes the bucket stop emptying? And that is the way we're processing histamine. So we have two different enzymes in ways that we break down histamine. And one is diamine oxidase, and we do that through our gut. And the other one is histamine N-methyltransferase, and that's going to be in your cells. So there are different things that start to happen that create these enzymes to become compromised so that we can't actually break down the histamine in our body. So if we're looking first at diamine oxidase, we have things like your genetic factor. So I'm one of those unfortunate people that do have a genetic variant in my DAO enzyme. Now that I know that and can do all the things to get over that and compensate, I can deal with it. But some people have these genetic variants that they don't even know about, that they're not able to process histamine well. But another one of the main things that we see, and we can get more into this, is GI disorder. So once you get an imbalance in your gut bacteria, it impacts your DAO enzyme, and you can no longer break down histamine very well. We can also see things like nutrient deficiencies, because we need things like B6, copper, vitamin C to be able to create this DAO enzyme. They, you know, we need those to support the DAO enzyme. So if you're not getting the nutrient deficiencies, you can have an impaired enzyme, which, you know, again, goes back to like some of these, we'll talk about some of these like cyclical things that happen. You know, you get impaired gut health, you're not absorbing as well, you don't get the nutrients, you don't have the enzyme breakdown as much. So we can get in some of these cycles. And then, you know, you can have, we can fill the bucket up too much where you're just eating too many histamine rich foods. We can also have medications that can impact it. And we'll dive, I'm going to give you the whole dynamic of hormonal imbalances because that estrogen can play a huge role here. And then we have the histamine N-methyltransferase. So we, that's within your, that's not in the gut, but that's actually within your cells. And so each cell has this. So when we start to have issues with methylation, so we probably, you may have heard of it, like the MTHFR genetic variant, different genetic variants. You need SAMe as a methyl donor for this process. So when we have some of these genetic variances or just are lacking things like B6, B12, folate, that can impair this function too. So we can start to see some impairment there. And then, we also can see liver impairment. So once we start to have issues, you know, we know our hormones are broken down in the liver. We start, you know, so many things are happening in the liver. So when we start to see liver impairment or over, you know, we can have excess toxins, excess alcohol consumption, things like that can also affect these things as well as medications. So we start to see some of these processes happen where we get clogs. So now, to the question. I gave you a lot of background information there, but I wanted to just give you like the, you know, why this is happening. So when I talk about some of this, you know, the kind of the history.
Yeah, now, totally. Amanda, it's why, great to we're getting a picture of the kind of people that might this may be really relevant for. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So then, you know, then I'm going to do immune system 101 here too, because this kind of plays into this estrogen issue. So we see when we're talking about hormones and histamine, the most common hormone that we're thinking of is estrogen and people with estrogen dominance, higher levels of estrogen. And so when we're stepping back again to, the histamine's part of our immune system, we are looking at we have an innate and adaptive immune system. So your innate immune system is the one that's reactive, you know, that's your first line. The adaptive immune system is kind of detecting certain allergens, it's in the background, but your mast cells are part of your innate immune system. And so they're going to react when we have things that come in, that foreign invaders, we need them. That, you know, the problem happens when we get this overreaction. So estrogen can actually make your mast cells, which is part of our immune system, more reactive. So our mast cells are what are going to release the histamine. So when we have the estrogen making the mast cells more reactive, because mast cells actually have estrogen receptors on their surface. So when estrogen is binding to the receptors, it can actually trigger the release of histamine. And therefore you can get higher levels of estrogen can increase the histamine release from these cells. So we start to see, oh, if you have increased estrogen, you can get increased histamine. Now, this it becomes this cyclical problem because histamine can also influence the hypothalamus. So when we're looking at our hormonal axis, we have the HPA-TG axis, which starts with the hypothalamus. So we know that the hypothalamus is, you know, a key region in the brain that's going to stimulate our hormones. And so when we have this, histamine can stimulate the release of gonadotropin releasing hormones, which can therefore stimulate, you know, the pituitary gland to secrete more LH and FSH. And in response, the ovaries are going to release more estrogen. So as you can see, it starts to become a problem for a lot of people because you start to have estrogen dominance, which is creating more histamine release, and then histamines are creating more estrogen. And so we need to break that cycle and to actually make it matters a little bit worse, we're going to say, or more complicated anyway. Estrogen can also inhibit the activity of diamine oxidase. So we talked about, that's why I wanted to go into the diamine oxidase. We talked about diamine oxidase is what's helping you break down your histamines in, you know, when you're eating these foods, but when you have high levels of estrogen, you can get that inhibited too. So we can also see that where we're not breaking down histamines in our gut as well. So when we're having estrogen dominance, we also will often have, you know, low progesterone. So we're having it more estrogen and less progesterone. And so that can also play a role, the lower levels of progesterone, because progesterone is believed to help stabilize mast cells. So when we have this high level of estrogen that's overacting and we don't have the progesterone that's helping to balance, we can, you know, kind of get out of control sometimes.
Wow, it's such a clear picture on how we can just start to really spiral downwards because these factors interplay. What is the typical patient that you would see who is affected by histamine and hormone imbalances? What kind of age range? What kind of symptoms?
I see a lot of people have hormonal migraines. So when I see people that are getting those hormonal migraines, you know, I think we look at hormones for sure first, but I'm always thinking about histamine because of this dynamic. So a lot of times once we start to see this patient that comes in and is having these regular hormonal migraines, you know, and you can often see them over a lifetime. So you can see that, you know, maybe when they started their period, they've had these monthly migraines. And it's just, I think when we're looking at that picture, it's so normalized. It's just like, oh, that's just what happened. You know, as we see with so many, you know, when you're having the cramps, when you're having the breast tenderness, when you're having the migraines, you know, it's like, oh, that's just part of your period. Oh, that's just part of your cycle. And it's like, oh, wait, no, we don't, as you're talking about probably in this whole summit, we don't need to have any of those symptoms. We can bring them back. So that's one thing I do see, you know, and I think you're not thinking of, because migraines are a actual symptom of histamine, you know, issues. So I see that commonly. Another thing where you can start to see in perimenopause, because we're starting to get this hormonal imbalance. So, you know, you naturally are becoming estrogen dominant sometimes because your progesterone's going down first before we see that decline in estrogen. So as we see some of those hormonal imbalances start to take place, we can sometimes see these, you know, that's why some of the symptoms I feel like come out stronger during perimenopause, where you haven't maybe had them before, and now you're getting that shift in hormones, and now they're starting to show more and more.
Right. And I mean, there can be many other links, can't there? Because I sometimes see that people in perimenopause become so much more sensitive to alcohol and things like this. Mm-hmm. Yes. What kind of triggers do you think people should be looking out for?
As far as histamine? Yeah, so, you know, we see it a lot, you know, so we're thinking about, when we're thinking about histamine, again, we're thinking about the filling of the bucket versus the you know, being able to process. So we've talked about the processing and how we're gonna, you know, what we need to do there. But then we also need to think about things that are filling the bucket. So, you know, you wanna look at diet first of all. So some of the things that you can look at is what does your diet look like? And we wanna make sure, you know, there are a lot of foods that actually are high in histamine. And I think what's really tricky about the foods are that they are not always unhealthy foods, you know, so it's sometimes easier, you know, it's easier to look at sugar, it's easier to look at inflammatory foods, which we want to do. But we're, you know, sometimes we're looking at strawberries and tomatoes and bananas and avocados and things that people are really purposely eating because they're healthy. But they can be actually high in histamine or stimulating histamine release. And so we want to look at kind of what our diet is and figure out. On my website, it's just megmill.com. I actually have a form that you can, you know, guide that you can actually list what has histamine and not, because there are a lot of confusing lists that aren't true. You know, you can, if you Google it, you're going to get a lot of conflicting information, and sometimes those lists aren't accurate. So I've spent a ton of research really getting the list, because there are foods that are high in histamine, there are foods that are histamine liberating, there are foods that limit the inhibition of DAO, so like inhibit that DO enzyme, and then there, you know, so there's all sorts of different foods that have different components that play into it. Another thing when we're talking about food is leftovers. And this can be really hard for people who meal prep, because histamine grows in food. So if you're cooking food and then you're actually prepping for the week because you have a busy week, that's great. But if you have a histamine issue, you could be triggering yourself. And so looking at some of those things. Then we look at mast cell activation syndrome. So sometimes people have oversensitive mast cells. We're seeing this so much more since the pandemic that people are, really presenting with mast cell issues. And so it's more and more common. And think of it, if you're someone who just has all of these different symptoms that you go to your doctor and you say, okay, I feel this way and I feel that way, and you get your labs back and they say, oh, you're fine, it's fine. And you're like, I had someone tell me yesterday, actually, I know what fine feels like, and that's not how I feel, because she was told that by her primary care doctor. And it was like, she's saying, I know what fine feels like, and I'm not that. And really listen to you have your intuition, you know there's something off. And that's where it's some of these multi-system things that you're having, different. Maybe you're having some allergy symptoms, maybe you're having some skin symptoms, some GI symptoms, some headaches, some, anxiety, brain fog, fatigue. They're all these. Well, you may have, activated mast cells where you're releasing these chemicals more than other people. And we need to really, in that case, look at why. Do you have an underlying gut infection? Have you been exposed to certain toxins? Do you have mold exposure? Do you have, what is going on? And we need to really dig into why some of those things are going on. And then, we were talking, just really looking at hormone balance, because when we start to, have you ever been evaluated? Have you ever done an in-depth hormone evaluation and seeing where your hormones are, really getting the balance that you need in order to get everything back into place? Because hormones are all about balance. So once you get the balance, you can often see a lot of these symptoms start to go away.
Right. And I mean, on that subject, what again would you say to people to look out for with mast cell activation? Because I think this is kind of the key as to why we're doing conferences like this, to raise awareness about all of these seemingly unrelated symptoms and what some of the underlying causes might be. What would you say about mast cell activation? How does that present?
So mast cell activation is going to be when those mast cells, when we went back to the immune system, just become oversensitized. So, what in a normal reaction, you're going to have, let's say you're exposed to the allergy or the toxin, you're going to have the histamine response. It's going to go, and then it's going to turn off, and then you're going to turn on when you need to, and you're going to turn off. Well, what happens is these mast cells start to become activated. They have, and so little things, they're either constantly activated or, the littlest thing can trigger. So you start to become sensitive to things that most people aren't sensitive to. I was actually shopping and I walked through, one of the things that just makes me think of it is I walked through the perfume section of the store, and I'm like the kind of person, because I am more sensitive, that I feel like I have to like hold my breath, because I'll start getting a headache from the smell of the perfume, rather than feeling like, oh, all this smells so nice that everyone's sharing this. It's like those sensitive, do you react to smell? Do you react to sound? Do you react to light? Does your skin, do you get, like, make a line on your skin and it stays red? You can see, do you have sensitive skin? Do you have gut issues? Do you have, and are you having all of these we're looking at sensitivities, and they can vary for people. Some people with mast cell activation syndrome can be like highly sensitive, where they can't take anything. You can't even take supplements. You react to everything. We can, it can be very extreme, or it can be, you can have just some levels of sensitivities. But you want to look at, like, again, at some of these multi-system things. Are you having symptoms in different symptoms, like our systems? Are you having, are you having the brain fog and the anxiety and the fatigue, but then you also have the allergy symptoms, you have some gut symptoms, you have, and they can be, what's tricky is it can be some of them and not all of them. But it's really when you're, I say it's someone who feels like they are sensitive and you're going to get checked, you're making that effort, something's off generally, and you can't get the answer. And no one's, because it's very hard to diagnose, there's not, easy testing to do. So you're saying your labs are clear, but you still have some of these symptoms. You might have headaches, you might have hormone symptoms, bad PMS, all of those things can also play a role. Does
Yeah.
that clarify? I know that it's a complicated syndrome.
That really clarifies it. And I think many people can feel very isolated when they start to become sensitive and be restricted in what they can actually do without knowing why, you know.
Yes.
And with the hormone picture, how does that play out? Does it change periods? Does it change any physical symptoms? What do you tend to see on that front?
Yeah, so you know, we start to see a lot of, you know, we're seeing a lot, like we're talking about that estrogen. So we're seeing a lot of the estrogen dominant symptoms, and like I'm saying, the hormonal migraines and things like that. So I would say it would have more of the estrogen dominant picture generally. You know, it's everyone's so different. So I would say that would be a generality, but you're seeing more of that. You know, heavy periods, cramping, moodiness, you know, you're having, I actually hear people say, you know, and you probably do too, that I have like one good week of the month. So, you know, they often say, you know, I have one good week of the month and then it starts all over. And then I'm in, you know, and then my symptoms start back up and then I have PMS and then I have my period and then I have, you know, like, so you feel like you're just sort of on that roller coaster where you're riding the wave of your hormones rather than feeling the same, you know, through the month. And I think women's hormones fluctuate. Everyone can have that to a very, you know, a slight degree, but we don't want you living by the feeling that your hormones are controlling your life.
And what would you say to someone that is suspecting they've got something going on that's causing their symptoms? What kind of workups should they have? Where should they start?
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the first thing that I would do, you know, a lot of this comes back to gut health when we're talking about the DAO enzymes and really the histamine. So there's a couple different things here that really one talked about the fact that an imbalance in the gut and the gut bacteria can cause an altered DAO enzyme, which is what you need to break down histamine. Another component comes in that you actually have histamine producing bacteria that can become overgrown in your gut. So I've had people who actually have had no GI symptoms at all. And I've said, we need to run a stool test. And they were like, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure why I'm not having any symptoms. Like you're having, you know, clear histamine issues. And they have come back where they have these histamine producing bacteria. And when we're able to eliminate those, a lot of the histamine issues go away. So, you know, people that have suffered for years and years and years of histamine issues, you know, over decades, we just needed to really do some gut healing and really bring that back into balance, and the symptoms just clear up. So I would say really to go, the one thing, you know, is really focusing on your gut and your gut health. You know, when that's interesting too, because, you know, even when it's all of these things that are interconnected. So even when we're talking about gut health and we're talking about hormones and we're looking at things like constipation or high levels of beta-glucuronidase that are actually making estrogen become reabsorbed back into the body. So we're, in addition to looking at the histamine producing bacteria, in addition to the DAO enzyme compromise, we're also can get estrogen reabsorption because maybe you're not moving your bowels enough, or you have a high level of a beta-glucuronidase, which is cleaving estrogen and having it back in your system. So, you know, and then that could be activating you. So that's another thing, you know, to even pay attention to. Then we can start to get things like leaky gut, where you're getting tears in your gut lining, you're getting intestinal permeability, and then you're activating your immune system. So that we're talking, this is all immune response. So that comes into play. So a lot of times when I'm working with histamine, that's the first place that I will go, is working on gut healing, and, you know, really with someone, and in a focus with someone who understands the histamine aspect of the gut too, because there are, you know, it's tricky, because when we're talking about, a lot of people will say, when, you know, you're looking at the basics of gut healing are, you know, take a probiotic, eat fermented foods. Well, those fermented foods are high histamine. They're just going to bother you. So they're not going to be your friend until everything is healed. So we don't want to put those on, but, you know, you hear that, you read it, it's out there. You know, even probiotics, while probiotics can be good. There are certain probiotics that can actually have problems for people with histamine. So, you need a good probiotic that's not about histamine producing, that's not going to aggravate those bacteria. So we need to really look at that in a picture that we know will be health promoting for you.
So this is an example of where testing can really help clarify the picture, because if someone is just following generic advice, they may actually be compounding their histamine and hormone issues.
Yeah, without understanding that they are, and it's all good advice, but you have to look at the person and what they're going through, and really it's unique for each person. So sometimes that overall, fermented foods can be good, but they're not good for you right now, for sure, if you're having histamine issues.
So what kind of easy first steps can people take?
So I would say the first thing that you can do is just look at your diet. So, we're going to look at our diet and see like, okay, are you eating foods that are high in histamine? You kind of find that list. Like I said, I have a resource you can go print out and see if you're eating these foods. Sometimes even other foods like proteins can bother some people with histamine issues because histamine is made from amino acids, and so sometimes people can have issues even with meats, what different meats. And so caffeine can bother you sometimes. So looking at your diet, and then looking at also making sure that you're eating fresh food. Like I said, leftovers can be a problem for people with histamine. So, and then what I actually have a lot of people do is just actually do a symptom diary. So not tracking your food every day, and maybe not pulling all the foods out right away, because some of these foods, like we said, are healthy, but look at your symptoms and look at your diet and see, okay, every time I eat tomatoes, am I getting some of my symptoms that are bothering me? Am I, every time I eat this food? And I mean, it's really, I've just worked with so many, like hundreds of people, that it's really amazing what foods come up. I mean, it's different for everyone, but some, when people start to realize, oh my gosh, that food was bothering me and I didn't even realize it, and I would have never even suspected it. And then they pull it out and see some of these symptoms clear up. It's really enlightening. So that's like a very easy way to start. That's simple. You can do that. Really then making sure that you're getting the right nutrients, that you're getting things like vitamin C, you're getting B6, things that are going to help really make these enzymes and help you promote. So, and really eating a balanced, nutritious diet. So that's another thing. We didn't really even get into, there also is a cortisol component with all of this too, but working on stress management and bringing down cortisol levels, because that's another place that we can see some of this mast cell activation and things like that happen. So just even putting lifestyle things in that you can maybe do some breath work or some meditation, and bringing your body back into that parasympathetic. I love vagal nerve toning and different breath work specifically. Really just reducing that overall body stress is really important. So we do a lot of, I work a lot with people on that, because I mean, I think that we're all living in the sympathetic nervous system too much of the time. So we need to bring that down. And then really looking at environmental stressors. So when we were talking about mast cells, we're talking about toxins and molds and heavy metals and chemicals and allergens around you. And so how can you bring your overall exposure and overall load down in order to calm your immune system and calm your mast cells and bring down those histamine loads?
And I think you've given us such an outline there of how you address it long term. Do you find that these things can get better or worse with time? I mean, can they get better if someone goes through menopause, for example?
Yes. Yeah. So with hormones, it can. When we're not, some, I think it's a multi, I think with histamine intolerance, it's often a multi-pronged approach. So it just depends on, is that your only reason? So I definitely think hormonally going through menopause, yes, you're gonna, especially if you have that progesterone drop through perimenopause, your estrogen dominant, once your estrogen levels go down. And that's why we actually hormonally often see, when we're talking about migraines, I'm bringing that up because there's that common trend. We often see the hormonal migraines decrease after menopause because our estrogen is lower. We're not getting those symptoms anymore. But it just depends too on what is your whole, what's in that whole bucket that we're talking about? You know, if it's a hormonal balance and that's it, then yes, a hormone change can make a difference. If you have more than that going on, sometimes we need to look at the other factors and really look at it as a multi-prong approach to get everything back into balance. And then you can definitely, I would say definitely you can live without symptoms and really get to the root of this. It just takes sometimes, investigation. And so it's looking at hormones, looking at gut health, maybe looking at genetics, looking at your toxin exposure, putting all of those pieces together, and then re-regulating your nervous system often and getting some of those things back in balance. And once we do that, we just see the symptoms clear up, and it's really amazing. Yes.
That's amazing. Meg, where can people find out more about your work?
Yes, well, thank you. I am at my website is megmill.com. It's just megmill.com. I have, like you mentioned, the podcast called A Little Bit Healthier. So come over and join me over there. I'm actually also hosting a summit on histamine and mast cell activation syndrome in June. So come on over to my website and we'll have more information about the summit. We're going to do 7 days deep dive. And so if you think like, hey, this might be something that I have, I'd love to share. You're going to get a lot of information, everything you want to know in that summit. So, yeah. And then I'm over on Instagram at Dr. Meg Mill. It's just DrMegMill. So thank you so much for having me today. I love sharing this information.
Thanks, Meg. I think you've pointed so many of us to to a whole pathway that a lot of us may not have thought about. Thank you.
Thank you so much.